The lawlessness that has plagued Iraqi life since the U.S. invasion is weighing heavily on the country's women, along with economic worries and the growing influence of religious conservatives. Safety concerns have many women living increasingly sheltered lives. NPR's Anne Garrels has that story.
16-year-old Selma Riad is in a bad mood. She's just lost a fight with her younger sister over whose turn it is to do the dishes. To make matters worse, she wants to visit her best friend, but there's no one to escort her. Her father, of necessity, works overseas in Libya. Her mother's sick, and her older brother's simply too busy. Selma doesn't argue about the danger. She wouldn't dare go out on her own. Anyway, her mother wouldn't let her. Her 10-year-old cousin is one of many here in the capital who've been kidnapped for a hefty ransom. So she and her younger sister do what they do every day. Flip through the TV channels, finish the housework, play on the computer, and sleep. They sleep too much. Selma's bored out of her mind and can't wait for school to start again. But even then, she'll have to be escorted back and forth. But it wasn't always this way. Her older sister Miriam feels for her. She had much more freedom in her teens, albeit under Saddam.
I made it as a fun life, not a boring life. I used to go to institutes and learn English, and I like English songs. It was different. It was different and fun.
She thinks the current restrictions have sapped her younger sister's overall confidence, making them shy and withdrawn. Miriam also has to have a male escort these days, but at 21, she at least can call on college friends to accompany her.
It is still boring, but I'm better than them.
But she, too, bristles at the restrictions.
I like to do everything on my own. I like to do something, I do it, without waiting for other people to have the time to help me to like that. Yeah, I don't like asking people. And time, you cannot go late, you cannot stay late outside the house, yeah.
For these young people, there are no more picnics in the park, no visits to restaurants, and few parties. These changes began in subtle and not so subtle ways even before the American occupation, as many Muslims sought refuge in religion. Miriam's cousin, Isra Abdul Sahid, now 35, recalls how when she was in college, she and her friends wore short skirts and no headscarf. But that is now the rare exception. Isra says the changes started because of so many wars.
There was a kind of reaction by people that life is short and anybody may die at any moment. So it's better to stick to our doctrines, to our principles.
Saddam capitalized on Islam's growing appeal, shifting from his secular stance. He cast himself as Islam's most ardent defender. And the role of religion has only intensified with the American invasion. So a combination of stricter religious observance, social pressure, and growing harassment on the streets has middle-class urban women covering up as never before. Miriam wears a favorite pair of tight jeans at home, but she wouldn't dare wear them beyond the threshold, changing into a long skirt and loose shirt before venturing outside so as not to attract unwanted attention. She also puts on a scarf, but this, she says, is her choice, a sign of devotion. And she nods when Isra says wearing a scarf has nothing to do with lack of freedom.
We know that Islam, on the contrary, Islam encourages women to work, encourages women to be educated. In fact, Islam looks upon women as equal to man, equal in rights and in duties.
But women's status in this society is far from certain. Women have suffered more than men from high unemployment, and fundamentalists are now challenging the concept of equality. When Miriam graduates as a computer engineer next year, she hopes to have a job. She hopes to choose her own husband, and in fact, has already met the man of her dreams, a fellow college student. They talk on the phone all the time, see each other at college, and have made plans for the future. But, she quickly adds, they are definitely not dating.
You know, at our society, we are forbidden from relationships. You know, it's not right, and it's not good for you, maybe. Because most of the boys just, like everywhere, they play with girls.
She says her boyfriend isn't that kind of boy, and she's trying to figure out how to tell her mother. She's afraid her mother might object because the boy's a Shiite Muslim, and she is a Sunni. She wants and needs her parents' approval.
We need to depend on our family. I guess in your country, everyone has to marry of his own, right? But here, no. We need our parents to agree on everything we do. I'm not feeling very great for not telling her. I used to tell my mother everything.
Despite the current uncertainties, her cousin Isra believes Miriam's future will be better than hers, a life shattered by repeated wars. But Miriam isn't sure her dreams will come to nothing, too.
It's either going to get better or it's going to get really worse and will never get better. It's better. It is better than the first days after the war, but it's not good. Still not like before. Still not what we hoped that life would be, what the American has promised. They've done nothing. They achieved nothing. None of their aims or ours.
But she hasn't given up hope. And it distresses her that all her friends are talking about leaving Iraq.
Everyone here is talking about traveling outside the country. I'm just dreaming that it will get better here so we can live here. But now it is not. It is very hard to live here. But I think it's harder to live outside, you know? Right?
Ann Garrels, NPR News, Baghdad.
Tomorrow, Ann Garrels will have a report on the lives of women in a traditional Iraqi village.